Hi, everybody. Jamie Peck here, along with my co-host,
Sam Beard.
That's right. And we would like to plug our Patreon. Oh my God, I fucked it up. I know that I sort of piggybacked off of the Everybody Loves Communism feed when first launching the show because it was the easiest thing to do. Setting up a new podcast with new feeds is not, you know, it's not that hard, but it's not the simplest thing. But anyway, I just want everyone to know that Party Girls has its very own Patreon page now, and you can use it to give us money.
Ooh.
Support the wonderful work that we are doing that you love so much.
And folks can check out our Patreon at www.patreon.com/partygirls. That's patreon.com/partygirls. That was a public service announcement. Hey, Jamie, long time no see. Haven't seen you since the Tucson airport.
Oh, my God. I know. It's been forever.
Or the Phoenix airport. We're not that bourgeois. We had to fly out of the major hub.
Yeah. It was, man, I'm still tired. I'm still recovering.
Me too. I'm fucking like, exhausted.
I'm like, if I have. okay, so I've always found it difficult to get exercise on the regs. I don't have to go into the reasons why. Like, it's just, yeah. It is what it is. It's never made an appreciable impact on my mental health. I just love sitting on my ass. That is the best thing for my mental health personally. And my day-to-day life is not that physically demanding, so it doesn't really make a difference in how I feel from day to day. And I'm not quite old enough for it to catch up with me so that I just feel like shit all the time, except sometimes when my back hurts. But like for a thing like this, right, I feel like it maybe if anything's going to get me to do it, it's going to be the ability to participate in things like this without feeling totally shitty for like a fucking week afterwards, because I don't feel great. I don't feel great. Unlike Hillary Clinton, who, you know, she likes to say it. I feel great. No, I don't. It sucks. And I went out to a march over the weekend and I, you know, ran around in the rain at this march for Gaza. And it was cool. It was beautiful. Like 10,000 fucking people came out in the pouring ass rain. So that was cool. But again, I was like, man, I'm fucking tired. Yeah. So maybe that's my fitness goal. The ability to participate in marches and, you know, maybe spicier activities someday if I really put in the work, you know, get those sick gains.
Allegedly spicy activities. You know, it's interesting that you bring that up. I had the exact same realization over my time off work, I guess. It's so funny using all of my vacation time to just ceaselessly grind doing this shit.
You're working so you don't have to try so hard, as a wise man once said.
Damn. That's actually, that ties in nicely with what we're talking about, right? It's like, I had the realization that it's like, if this is going to continue to be my lifelong journey, I'd like to maybe be a little bit more intentional about it, a little bit more disciplined about it, a little bit more just in different in areas that I haven't done before. And for me, that meant like really taking care of my body for the same reasons that you're talking about.
What you got there? A little LaCroix?
I got a lime LaCroix.
Nice. Yeah, so I guess this is a wellness podcast now, where we're going to give you tips for Antifa fitness and, you know, motivation to go to the Antifa gym. They have one of those at Woodbine Space, P.S. I was just there last night admiring it.
That's sick. I would love to check it out. I've never been to Woodbine. I heard about it like fucking 10 years ago or something, 2016, 2014, whenever that controversial piece Nomos of the Earth came out. I've never been.
Oh, that's good. I mean, I feel like you've seen one of these kinds of spaces. You've seen them all. This is just the Ridgewood version.
I don't know if that's true, because some of them are a lot nicer than others. Some of these hubs, if you will.
Mm. Well, this one's pretty nice, I think, as these kinds of hubs go. And I've seen a few in my day. Nobody lives there, which eliminates the sort of like punk house aspect of it, for better or for worse. That probably makes it nicer. I don't know. There's some really good art on the walls. They recently moved to a bigger space so they could have a real mutual aid operation and a real kitchen. So that's pretty sick. It's a decent size. I'd say they were like, how many people showed up to my talk? That's the last time I was there before last night when I did the forest talk, which was only slightly marred by the presence of naysayers during the Q&A. Mostly it was pretty fucking positive. How many people were there? I'm bad at estimating. I'd say like more than 50.
That's good. That's a lot of people. You know, one of their collective members, Matt Peterson, just came by Chicago and gave a presentation about the history of the Woodbine space, as well as sort of how some of them are conceptualizing another paradigm, sort of revolutionary paradigm right now, where they were sort of, they've been focused on survival as a framework for, you know, the 21st century revolutionary movement, which was not something that I really had thought about that much. I think about insurrection, I think about revolution, I think about other things like that, but sort of just taking 2001, 9/11 as like the beginning of this new era that we grew up in and that we came to being in, and just how that really set the pace for the increasingly frequent and severe series of disasters of all sorts of kinds that we're trying to figure out how to weather together.
Yeah, well, you gotta keep everyone alive if you want any chance of success, right? Because the vast majority of people are going to follow the people that they think can keep them alive the best.
Well, this is the guy that I think can keep us alive the best.
We'll teach Donald Trump a valuable lesson. Don't mess with the women of America unless you want to get the benefit.
Fuck. That's so dark.
The cheering in the background, there's just like these millennial girls in the background that just look so confused, but they're clapping and waving their flags anyway.
Oh boy. What's it like? Oh, to be one of them. It sounds so peaceful.
I know. Sometimes I'm like, I wish I didn't know everything that I know.
It really is like a cursed knowledge once you've eaten the fruit of the tree. I was going to call it the old man's cursed fruit, and then I remembered that you, my friend, are not a Marxist. So I don't know what old man you would have in mind when I said that, but maybe you have one.
Probably Noam Chomsky is the oldest person I can think of on the world.
But once you've eaten the old man's cursed fruit, you really can't go back. Except people do, which is fucking crazy to me. And they do. I mean, they do it for all sorts of different reasons. Sometimes they just get like cranky and weird in their old age. Sometimes usually there's like some material benefit to, you know, pretending not to know the things you know, or, you know, hide your power level, as they say, as I have tried to do to varying degrees of success or failure in the past in my career, in my own career, before finally saying like, fuck it. I'm just going to do sex work and say my real opinions and see how that goes. But like,
you know,
it's crazy. Sorry. No, I'm done.
I've seen it happen. Yeah. In addition to like the isolation that can come from like having a kid and not having this sort of communal infrastructure set up to not have it be a white picket fencifying force in your life. I've also just seen a lot of people slip back into normiehood. I'm not sure what the right term is. Squareness, non-revolutionary activity, non-community-based living, as a result of having their like hearts severely broken by people that they care about and just being mistreated and social conflicts being let run amok to the point where people get isolated or pariahed. Oftentimes I've seen it happen a lot along gender lines where women and femmes in spaces don't feel like they're being heard adequately, and they feel like they get pariahed, and then they kind of just go take care of themselves elsewhere.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I feel like I'm having kind of the opposite journey at the moment, which is cool. I mean, knock on wood, because you never know when one bad thing may come along and the whole house of cards comes tumbling down. But I mean, I feel like I've talked about this before, but I am really just now starting to feel like I'm my own person in these kinds of spaces and not an appendage of my now ex-husband, who I don't really need to worry about running into him at this point because he's not really involved in these kinds of spaces anymore, at least not the ones that I'm a part of. So that's cool. That's cool for me. Yeah. For once, for a lady to have the opposite journey. It feels nice.
That's really inspiring, yeah. And you should write about that, because I'm sure a bajillion people want to hear that same story. I think those things are really worth documenting as part of sort of like someone's revolutionary becoming. Like, those are the relational elements of it are like oftentimes undertold parts of our stories, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And that is part of why I want to write this book still, with that included, because it really wasn't included on the first pass, the one that got rejected by all of the big publishers. So I just got some news just now, actually. Breaking news in Jamie world. My agent is leaving the agency, and there was like some question as to whether I would go with her or get passed off to another agent at the agency. So I got to talk to her still. But as for the agency itself, they're like, oh yeah, send us your book proposal and we'll see if we can pass it off to anyone else. And they just emailed me back today and the answer is no one else wants me. So now I'm going to talk to her and see if she still wants me.
Well, I very much hope that they do, because I look forward to reading this book when it comes out.
Thank you. I think it will. Still, I hope. I mean, it would be a shame not to. I might have to just fucking put it on Substack or something. Not some non-traditional way of publishing it, but I'm like low-key committed to it. I'll say.
Good.
It's not like my I really need, because okay, this is how ADHD brain works. I really need an assignment and a deadline, or else I'm not gonna do shit. It's amazing to me that I have come this far with it without any of those things. So just gotta, maybe I'll start taking my fucking ADHD meds again. I don't know, I feel a little scattered these days, but I'm just gonna try and vibe it out, see what happens.
So to circle back to what you started with at the beginning is, I had this like profound, I also have so-called ADHD, or at least I sure feel like I do.
In so-called America.
And there's a period in my life that I remember distinctly, which was like about a month during fall of 2022, when I just became wildly militant and disciplined about my habits, including exercise. And I was going to the gym for about an hour and a half, about five times a week, and saunaing every single time afterwards, and going to bed before 10. Screens off at 10, being asleep by midnight every day, not having refined sugar, no caffeine after noon, no drugs, no alcohol. And it was unbelievable how focused and how fresh and how alert and how powerful and how annoying I felt the entire time. And it just kept going upwards in this spiral. And I had never experienced that before. I'd experienced like the downward spiral of like bad habits on bad habits on bad habits, just making your body feel worse and worse and worse. But I had never experienced the inverse. And sort of to take it back to what you were talking about like the revolutionary potential in taking care of oneself and your vessel or whatever. It's like I had a real experience doing that, and I think it would make us all more powerful revolutionary actors if we all could do some type of thing like that. And it didn't feel sustainable for me for whatever mental health reasons, but it's something I'm really excited to get back into, and I think that could help with focus too.
I'm sure it could help with all of those things. That's a lot of fucking exercise. I think it's important to set goals that are, you know, achievable. Like my new, okay, so here's a tip. I'm going to share a tip now. This, now that this is a wellness podcast, and I'm also going to unmask myself as someone who sometimes reads the Patreon stylings of Kat Marnell, who, I don't know if you know who that is.
Mm-mm.
She was like a glamorous, drug addicted beauty writer. That was like how she rose to prominence. And now she's sober and, you know, she has a Substack and she's like working on a new book and shit. And I like, I kind of know her through mutual friends and I enjoy her. I mean, she's definitely not a, a leftist of any kind, although a lot of her friends are, which is funny. But I liked the most recent Patreon column or whatever it is, that her newsletter that she put out, where she discusses her daily routine. And one tip that I like from it is she gets up in the morning and she puts on her exercise clothes, which kind of double as like sitting around the house writing clothes. So when she's done with her first block of work, she goes on a run or whatever psycho shit she does that's like way more than I would ever do. But she's like already dressed for it. So that is what I did when I finally got out of bed and went to the store today. Granted, it was much, much later in the day than she does it. But after this, I think, because, you know, you're already ready to go, I think I will perhaps go try to get like 30 minutes of cardio, which is my current goal. If I can do 30 minutes of cardio a few days a week, that'll be so much better than what I'm doing now, which is like 0 minutes of cardio any day a week. And it's, you know, it's moderate temps out in New York right now, but also I have a key. This is a great blind item. I have a key still to the former apartment building of a former friend of mine who once lived a few blocks away. No, I will not discuss any further about this friend. You guys can draw your own conclusions, but that building has a gym in it. So when it is too cold to go, you know, walk around the park in a loop, I will go to this ex-friend's old building and use the gym. So that's probably what I'm going to do when we're done recording this podcast.
That's spectacular. I'm going to go to a meeting and then I'm going to go to the gym myself.
Ah, we're really doing the work. We're putting in the work. Happy belated Valentine's Day, by the way.
I guess it is.
You seem like you don't want to talk about Valentine's Day at all. That's fair.
No, that's okay. What did you do for Valentine's Day?
Oh my God, I had a really busy day on Valentine's Day this year.
I remember now. Yeah, keep going.
In addition to helping run an emergency meeting about the fucking raids that happened in Atlanta, I became aware that a man I was seeing was also seeing a friend of mine.
No.
Yeah.
That's what you're supposed to disclose that.
Yeah, well, he did not see fit to disclose that because he is a Brooklyn fuckboy. So, Jesus. And just like a deep dumbass, although he probably wants me to think that. He's like, yeah, great. Everyone's going to think I'm a deep dumbass and I'll get away with this shit forever, which he might be right. Honestly, it is Brooklyn after all. But the funny thing is, and I was just going to ghost on the situation, but, you know, he's a drummer, so he's in every fucking band. So he was playing the show that I had already made plans to go to with my friend who was visiting from Rhode Island. Shout out to Debbie.
That's why you have to date a singer.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, that might be something to consider. But anyway, so I had to fucking see him, and I was way too nice, of course. But I think I conveyed some messages to him. And he knew that we were friends and he did it anyway. And I'm like, what did you think was going to fucking happen?
Yeah, for real.
Like, girls talk to each other. But anyway, the funny
thing
is,
maybe he is just a dumbass.
I mean, he might be. And I remember too, when I was like, oh yeah, he's not that political, but I can teach him Which, you know, I still think it's like he could learn. Like, he's got perfectly sound. He's of sound mind. I mean, not where this stuff is concerned, but, you know,
maybe.
You know, in general. But you have to want to learn, too. And not everybody wants to. But one funny thing about this is that he used to, like, I know his last girlfriend was an Asian girl named Jamie. And my friend that he
good
was,
name.
Yeah, my friend that he was two-timing me with is Asian, and my name, as you know, is Jamie. So I'm
what he's if just he... trying to find her.
Yeah, he's trying to, like, Frankenstein her back together out of all his other bitches.
Scrounge the pieces out of the carpet fibers.
Yeah. So, you know, that didn't feel great, but we weren't that deep into it yet to the point where it would be, like, a life-shattering thing. Mainly, he just wounded my pride, so... That was it was a big day for me, but in the grand scheme of Valentine's days in which I am single, I'd say it still rates pretty high, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's fucked.
I barely cried at all this year.
I don't know if I cried on Valentine's Day, but I did stay up way too late watching. Oh my God. Watching The Office the night before, eating sugary snacks. And I was just like, felt so bad all day Valentine's Day from just like my body metabolizing the sugar while I slept. So learned that lesson, you know, no longer a wellness podcast, I guess.
Well, you know, we all fall off the wagon now and again.
That is true.
And you know, it's everything in moderation. As long as you don't do that all the time, I think it's fine.
I can't do it all the time. It'll render me incapacity. Happy Valentine's Day, indeed. It's almost been a month.
Yeah. Happy belated to all you folks out there. Let's celebrate self-love, friend love, and comradely love, the most important love of all.
Yeah. Sorry we've been gone for so long. We really have been gone for a minute. I guess we took a week off before the summit because there was a lot of shit going on, and we had to sort of prep and... And then I think I was feeling particularly gung-ho about the summit. And I think I remember telling you, Jamie, we're going to pump out one podcast episode every single day while we're there. And you just looked at me like I was crazy.
There's no way. That was never going to happen.
So here we are, a week after the summit is over, getting to it for the first time. Which, you know, for those who are just tuning in now, the nationwide summit to Stop Cop City was a 4-day convergence in Tucson, Arizona, which was the first time that there had been a large scale convergence in the movement to stop Cop City outside of the city of Atlanta since the movement's inception in 2021.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah, brother. So the summit was 4 days, and what I guess you and I flew into Phoenix and landed there on Thursday and stayed at a lovely person's place out there.
Shout out to Mishka Shubali. Thank you.
Who seems like an extremely interesting person just based on when you get the joy of looking through someone's bookshelf when they're when you go visit their house.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just filled with amazing shit. So
we creeped so hard on this guy's life. I should mention that I've never actually met him, but he's very good friends with a good friend of mine, Jake Flores. So that happened.
I haven't either, and I love them dearly just based on their eclectic collection of knickknacks, books, and music and bones.
Yeah, this guy is a big fan of bones.
I think bones are a motif in the American Southwest, though, I will say.
Yeah. I mean, I picture the Southwest and I picture like a cartoon skull of a cow and a fucking tumbleweed. And he had all
and that's actually what it is.
It's literally what it is like there. He had all those things and more.
So we finally got to Tucson on Friday for the kickoff barbecue at the summit, which was just delightful in connecting with comrades and friends that I've met throughout struggles and throughout the Defend the Atlanta Forest movement. Which, to be honest, like seeing old friends and strengthening relationships is probably like 80% of why I go to these things. And it's not just from a sort of like pleasurable standpoint of seeing friends or a joyous standpoint of seeing friends, but it's like, I actually think that the relationships are sort of the building blocks upon which the revolution will be built. You know, we need to have dense ties that traverse our lives and our worlds.
And it's also fun. You don't have to choose between those two things. Sometimes fun can be constructive as well as just being fun in its own right.
Yeah. I need to be more honest. It's like when I say like cashing in my vacation days to ceaselessly grind, it's like I'm doing this because I want to do it, you know?
Yeah.
It's fun.
I will say, I think at least following this summit, I am too heavily involved to really have fun at these things, unfortunately. But maybe the next one will be different, because this summit felt very... I can't believe it was only 4 days. It felt like it was a fucking week with the amount of constant activity that I was engaging in.
Yes, I remember the Saturday morning feeling like we had been there for like 3 days.
Yeah, I'm like, oh shit, it's the second day? What?
And part of that is because they had a rave on the first night of the convergence.
Oh my God.
For anyone listening who's ever involved in a future upcoming convergence, week of action, any sort of protest camp or any sort of summit type thing, the rave goes on the last day. The rave does not go on the first day. And the rave the first night was like spectacular. It was up in this like canyon, this valley in the sky. It's called a wash. It's where like sometimes over the years and the years and the years, when the rivers get too big or when water flows come down the sides of mountains, they sort of carve their own ways and take that same way over and over again. And a wash is this sort of like flat-ish floodplain in a mountainous area where water pools over long periods of time on again and off again. And it sort of amounted to this like little tiny valley up on top of this mountain overlooking the outskirts of Tucson, where there was a rave that started at 11 p.m. and probably went until the sun came up on the first night of a convergence. But it was amazing. And it was like, I went there and I was immediately really sad about just... I don't know. Sometimes, you know, sometimes you just get sad for some reason that's hard to articulate, or you don't want to articulate it on your podcast. And the first DJ's last song just completely turned my night around. There was like this one like djembe or drum inside of the song, and I was like, oh, that's really nice. And then I just like made myself like lean into it, and it completely turned my night around. So shout out DJ.
I'm so glad that that happened for you. I also enjoyed the rave. It was fucking beautiful, although I just am really not into that kind of music and never will be. and like, in order to really have fun at a rave, I need to party, if you know what I mean. And there was absolutely no way that I would have been able to help run the WDS meeting the next day if I had really partied and, you know, done what I needed to do to actually enjoy myself at a rave where I don't really like the music that much. No shade on the music and the DJs. Like, I'm sure if you're into techno, they were really, really good, as you were just saying. But
I will also just say a note to our listeners is Jamie uses the word techno to describe the large varieties of music that could possibly be played at a rave.
Yeah, no, sorry. I'm ignorant and bigoted against rave music. That's the way it's always going to be. I mean, look, if I were going to get into it, it definitely would have happened by now, because I have consumed enough substances at enough of these events for probably several lifetimes. And I just never... I've gone to them sober too. There was a month at one point when I was a music journalist when I went to every single show. This was a stunt piece for the new MySpace. Remember that? Remember when MySpace like relaunched as like a music publication for a hot minute? Mm-hmm. So I was writing for them because, you know, writers just follow the money around wherever it happens to be at any given point in time. I mean, now that's literally fucking nowhere, but back then, it still would jump around from place to place. And I did a stunt piece where I went to every show for a month, every event they had at this DIY space in Brooklyn called 285 Kent at 285 Kent Avenue. And I had to go to a lot of whatever you want to call them, those kinds of parties with
DJs. Yeah, that sounds exhausting as
DJs.
Shit.
Yeah, it was. And I hated every second of every one of those parties that I went to. And there were some good bands that played, too, that I liked on different nights. But yeah, I went to a lot of those fucking things. And I never... And some of them were like, oh, wow, you saw that DJ? You saw that guy? And I'm like, yeah, I didn't like it. I'm sorry. But I, you know... It's to each their own, and, you know, we're good materialists, so we know that our choices of cultural product are not political, provided you're not, like, listening to a fucking Nazi or whatever. It's just music. And it's like, I've overthought this enough to the point where I'm like, you know what, even my friend Jorge, who's, like, big into raves and shit, he's like, you just don't like it. It's fine. Like, you don't have to have a big old, like, you don't have to psychoanalyze yourself. It's like, does this music make you want to dance? Yes or no?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like, I have to think through that, like, our taste in cultural products isn't political. Like, I don't know. The other day I was listening to, Killing in the Name of, but there was, like, that's a certified protest banger, you know? And is sort of like whenever I bring out the sound cart to a protest, it's always requested by people. And I think it stirs a type of like fury in the soul. And for me, that is a political force.
Oh, well, you know who else likes that song? Fucking Paul Ryan.
Fuck.
I'm just saying. So, well, for I'm not saying that music doesn't have a role to play in like hyping us up or whatever when we're doing political shit. Like we were talking off the show about our, you know, problematic faves that we would hype ourselves up to before we did these speaking events on our speaking tour. So yeah, no, it's got a role, but it's like, oh, if you like EDM versus like rock music, I don't think that really says that much about you as a person in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. There's a period in my life where I can like trace when I stopped being a punk too. And that was when I was 15 years old and I snuck into a Bass Nectar concert on Halloween and took ecstasy for the first time, which is way too young to be doing that shit. So,
wait, how old were you?
I was 15.
I feel like it's appropriate.
Okay. But it completely changed my life. You know, like I just like, a new fractal was opened up and I was like, who's Operation Ivy? I like this shit.
Well, you don't have to choose. That's the great thing about it. You can like both or neither. You can like something else that we don't even know about. So anyway, this is all to say that the rave was very cool, but they should definitely have it on a different night next time because, you know, out of respect for the people who actually have shit to do, which is a lot of us, I would like to have had more fun at that rave.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't build out the foundations for a materially revolutionary force if everybody's hungover. That's my hot take. So on Saturday, what was on Saturday? There was this conversation with Ben Maria.
It was so good. Do we want to like recap all of it? I took a lot of notes at this thing. We could save some of this for when we have him on because I
is that gonna happen?
Well, I talked to him afterwards and he said yes and he gave me his number, so like fucking probably, knock on wood.
That's sick. Okay, well, good enough for me.
But it was, I mean, we can say a few things about it.
Sure, that'd be great.
So yeah, there was a little talk with Ben Maria. I think he did a couple of them. He did one that was more focused around his art at the museum there, and he did one that was more sort of an informal ad hoc thing that was more focused around his political life. But, you know, he really doesn't see those two things as separate, right? Like the various publications and groups that he was involved with.
Who's Ben Maria?
He is a legendary anarchist from the 1960s era, and he had a publication called Black Mask that he did with some of his comrades. He had a group that they never intended to name themselves Up Against the Wall, Motherfucker, but it just kind of stuck, It was an evocative line from a poem by, oh yes, by Amiri Baraka. Yeah, it wasn't meant to be a name. It was a statement, but it stuck. And they really considered themselves to be doing politics and counterculture at the same time in ways that added to and complemented one another, right? Because he said, I mean, he believes if your revolution, if your group is only political, you wind up with authoritarianism. And if your group is purely countercultural, then, you know, you mostly just like get fucked up and don't do anything. So they were considered weird in both circles for trying to incorporate both of those things. I think he's largely right. I mean, I got to think a little more about what he about his thoughts on authoritarianism, and maybe we can talk to him about it, because I don't know that that's the only reason the groups become authoritarian.
For folks who don't know, like, Ben Maria's crew back in the 60s were the people who cut the fences to Woodstock. Like, yes, that Woodstock, where that was a paid music festival up in upstate New York. And spicy anarchist affinity groups rolled up there and cut the fences down. And they did so for the same reason that their crews partake in protests that stormed the Pentagon. And Ben Maria at his talk on Saturday said, we did those things for the same reason, which I just thought was a beautiful encapsulation of the spirit, the ungovernable spirit of the 60s.
Hell yeah. Speaking of affinity groups, he also invented that term in a conversation he had with fucking Marcuse and Bookchin. So this guy is really a greatest hits of anyone who's a nerd for this shit, right?
The real McCoy.
Also, oh my God, it was so cool. I asked him if he thought, you know, there was a Q&A part. I asked him if he thought that psychedelics still have a role to play in creating some sort of radicalized, politicized counterculture. Because, like, they obviously did in the 60s. I think it's very clear that psychedelics served a purpose in sort of deprogramming people from this kind of social programming that is almost inconceivable to us now, because we don't really have a fucking monoculture anymore. At least in the cultural sense, we live in a much more permissive world, although economically it's perhaps only gotten more fascist as time has gone on and neoliberalism has reared its ugly head. But I asked him if he thinks psychedelics and related substances still have a role to play, because I can see it from both sides, honestly. I love psychedelics. I think when I'm on them, I can see why people thought that, oh wow, we just have to get everyone in the world to take acid and we'll get rid of capitalism in no time, right? But I can also see it from the side of like, yeah, maybe this just gets you super high. Maybe that's pretty much all there is to it. And he said, you know, that's a good question. Timothy Leary asked me the same thing once.
This guy?
I was like, God damn, Ben Maria, you've got some cool friends.
I mean, there's that old line from the 60s, which is like, and maybe it's a Timothy Leary line, but it's like, you know, the psychedelics are like a phone call. Like, you pick up the phone and like, once you get the message, like, you can put it back down, and like, that message is going to stay there for you. And like, for me, it's like psychedelics were a huge part of my becoming when I was a fucking kid. And like, they, you know, I grew up in the most sterile of suburbs, fucking Naperville. For people from Chicagoland who are familiar, like, the most sterile, phony baloney suburbs. And this sort of like experience with these psychedelics, like, really just showed, like, it revealed the that everything was a lie, you know, in a way that deeply affected me for the rest of my life. I don't be doing that shit anymore, but I'm glad I did.
Word. I'm glad you did, too. For me, I feel like psychedelics have never really shown me anything that I didn't kind of know already, much like therapy, but on a more condensed and more fun scale. But like, it is like when I'm on, you know, I'm tripping. Like I always like, there's always some time when I like get so fucking nerdy, like talking about politics, that most of my friends are like, "All right, shut the fuck up, Jamie." Like, we're trying to party and get weird, and you like want to know my position on this fucking paper that you and your friends put out. Like, give it a rest. I'm like, sorry guys, sorry. I'm gonna go off by myself and like think about it some more without bothering you. But there are times when I'm on one, when the revolution feels like it's just very obviously going to happen. And like, I am very obviously going to take an active role in it along with lots of other people. Mm-hmm. And that is really scary, but also really cool. And I hope that, you know, I hope every time I try to carry a little bit of that feeling, that vibe, although it's like kind of hard to reproduce when I'm not on drugs, I want to carry that feeling, that confidence, into my regular life as mm-hmm. a political actor, because it can be very hard to see from day to day when we are all trapped in capitalist realism.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is to say, I guess I should define this for people, like, I mean, if you're listening, you probably know what it is, but just the idea that this system is eternal and unshakable, and that there is no way out and nothing any of us can do about it. Yeah. So that's nice. Yeah.
We can add that to our reading list.
Sure, sure. In our party girls reading group that we might be starting, if yeah, we can figure out how to do it.
At the summit, in our hot tub, thank you very much, we were offered an idea by a dear friend from the Midwest about doing a reading group here. So if you have any ideas on what that should look like, hit us up. But why don't we wrap up our talk about the summit? And by the way, I'm skipping over like 95% of the programming events that occurred.
Can't do everything.
Can't do everything. And even the things that we could go to, can't even talk about all of it. Because it wouldn't be that enjoyable to listen to. You need to just go to these things in order to get the most out of it. There were some goofy motherfuckers that were like, can we set up a Zoom setup in the camp so that people can like Skype into this thing? And it's like,
no,
dog, this is a protest encampment. Like, if you want to participate, you come, you know?
The protest encampment will not be televised.
Fuck yeah. So Sunday there was this badass presentation by three panelists called Ending Our Addiction to Losing, which was sort of taking aim at a politics of safety that's been pretty pervasive in liberal anarchist spaces, as well as like a specific type of identity politics and how it shows up and the correlation between those two.
It was so good.
Yeah, it was fire as fuck. It was probably one of the most well-attended panel discussions of the whole thing. All of this was outside, by the way. It was beautiful Tucson weather. It was like 80 degrees every fucking day. And I come back to Chicago, and it was just like 57 degrees like 3 days in a row before going. And then I go down there, and it's 80. And I come back, and I'm like, oh, shit, it's February still.
I had a very similar journey when I came back to New York City, believe it or not.
Been raining like crazy there.
Yep. Been raining in and outside of my house still.
Jesus. Yeah, we got to do a leak check every episode.
The leak report.
The leak report. So Sunday there was word going around that there was going to be a militant protest happening Sunday night, and there was probably an 80 or 100 person black block downtown Tucson where two banks that are funding climate crisis, including Wells Fargo, who has an executive who sits on the board of the Atlanta Police Foundation, this shady nonprofit funding Cop City, as well as PNC Bank, who's funding Mountain Valley Pipeline. Both of those banks had their windows smashed out, and revolutionary slogans, Tortuguita's name, as well as No Cop City, spray painted on their walls.
I think it sent a message. I think it sent a really strong message in combination with the more above board, nonviolent direct action that happened the next day.
Yeah, so, what did that look like?
They did a really successful action blocking the entrance to the gated community where one of the key nationwide executives lives, right? So bringing the fight home, pissing off their neighbors, embarrassing them in front of their community where they live. Mm-hmm. And everyone, you know, everyone got arrested and they got out pretty quickly. And I don't think they're facing any serious charges for this fairly above board NVDA. So on that level, I think the summit was a success. And it was able to bring people in who didn't know a lot of the, I mean, core organizers. I can't even say that really because the summit was so open source. But it was a mixture of seasoned organizers and brand new people. And they came up with some cool actions to do together. And it really made my heart sing when I saw the photos from the NVDA of these kids who I had been spending, you know, I spent like the last 12 hours with them. And, you know, some of them seemed really scared at the beginning. And at the end of it, they all seemed like they were sitting on top of the world. So that just, aww, you know, that warms my dark goth communist heart. And I want to see... That's like just my favorite shit, you know?
And it had the summit itself saw the holy trinity of action. It had the black bloc, it had the protest, and it had the lockdown. And all three of those things went off successfully, in addition to, dare I say, dozens of programming events over the course of the few days. Hundreds of people came in from around the country and were activated within the American Southwest in the Arizona area. And new friendships were made, longstanding relationships were strengthened, and pressure was put on to Nationwide, the insurer that's bearing down the brunt of insuring the Cop City project, which no doubt when these sorts of things happen is it serves as a sort of clarion call for other activists around the country to sort of take up to sort of reproduce those tactics. So I wouldn't be surprised if in the coming weeks and in the coming months we saw increased pressure put on Nationwide insurance. We've already seen pretty hot shit coming out of the Big Apple. We've seen it in some other cities around the country. And whenever these sorts of things happen inside of the Defend the Atlanta Forest movement, whether it be the Tortuguita Vengeance March that happened in January of 2023, a couple of days after they killed our comrade, or March 5th, which tomorrow is the one-day anniversary of, or even Block Cop City or something like that, is it sends a surge of energy back into the veins that traverse this country that support the Defend the Atlanta Forest movement, and it reawakens people into action again. And that's just how these things work, right? All of our movements are interrelated, and when the surge of energy comes and it's documented and it's shared and people hear about it, they get stoked and they feel that energy and they are more likely to take bold action as a result of it.
Yeah, totally. I think on that level, the summit was a great success. And one of many things that we hope continues to build that we're working on is the networks that you're talking about. And we're hoping to do this in somewhat of a more formalized way without becoming bureaucratic and static, which is never a good plan. But, you know, it's the eternal question, right? Like, how do you make an organization that is not purely spontaneous, right? I do not trust the idea that is, you know, put forward by some, like, one branch of communizers. I mean, I wrote about this at great length in my review of the George Floyd Uprising book. But I don't think it's ever going to be enough to just hope that people figure it out spontaneously without any kind of organization or network that exists to carry people from uprising to uprising. How do we make some sort of network, strengthen our bonds, develop new organizational forms so that people have somewhere to go in times when it seems like revolutionary activity is at an ebb? How do we do that without calcifying into something bureaucratic, dare I say, authoritarian, and something that ultimately acts as a block on self-activity. And we're trying to figure that out. And I think WDS is one of many ways that we're trying to figure it out. But I'm excited about the project. I'm excited about this plan. And I hope that we continue to build and to figure it out together. And, you know, I don't want to get out over my skis too much, because Stop Cop City is still very much an active movement, and it's an active fight. And it's I really think it's anyone's game at this point, right? Because we are outgunned. And, you know, unfortunately, we did lose a little bit of energy to the movement against the war on Gaza, which is totally understandable. Like, people are being slaughtered en masse. And it is very hard to be deeply committed to more than one thing at a time as an activist. I mean, if I wasn't already heavily involved in Stop Cop City, I probably would have chosen that.
Yeah.
I would have chosen Gaza, because, you know, people are being killed by the thousands right now. And that feels much more immediate. And it is. It is much more immediate. Although, of course, everything is connected. But yeah, it has been a little bit harder to get the numbers that we were hoping for something like Block Cop City that happened right after the genocide started popping off this time around. But where was I going with this? They're flailing. Like, on the one hand, we are a little outgunned. We're a little tired. We're very outgunned, I should say.
We're fucking tired as shit.
We're so tired. But, you know, the state is doing a lot of shit that sort of reveals that they are getting desperate.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they lied. They said that that Cop City was 70% built already, when anyone can see that that's not true. If you walk by the fucking construction site, they're claiming that. I think the raids were a really desperate attempt on the part of the Atlanta Police Department to show the backers of Cop City that they have this under control. Please don't pull your money out. I mean, we don't know yet. It remains to be seen. They might have some evidence that they're saving, but, you know, they also might not. It might be a huge bluff, and they might just be trying to buy a little time. So, yeah, it's anyone's game, but now that I have done this big disclaimer, I've said this in my talks, and it's not a secret that I believe this. Like, I hope that these networks last beyond the fight to Stop Cop City, win or lose. And that people are able to respond in a swift and organized fashion when more fucked up things happen in the world, no matter what those things are. And that's as specific or as far into the future as I'm willing to look at this moment.
Well, Big Pecker, I think you really clearly articulated one of maybe the primary motif of what I think this podcast will become, which is like exploring this question of what does it look like to build the party? What does that look like to have a sort of like partisan relationship to this work? And that can be conceptualized of in a lot of different ways. Like, you know, when you go to a restaurant and you're like, party of six, like that's a party. That's a group of people who are like doing a thing together. I'm sure there's another definition than that, but like the term can be, for me at least, can be used that loosely and maybe is best used in that open-ended of a form. But having a sort of like understanding the stakes in the matter of the how we organize together, and you use the term organizational form, which I imagine we'll continue to use a lot over this podcast, because I'm not super comfortable with the language, just personally, of like an organization or something like that. I think it's not particularly alluring for a lot of people, and it gets too busy worried about what it is, you know, instead of how it does things or something like that. But I really like the way you articulated that. I would love us to continue to come back to this question pretty much every time we meet, and maybe sort of tease out further what it might look like to have a Party Girls book club where we read and call in friends of ours talk about texts that have been important to us in our revolutionary becomings and what they mean for the current moment and what they might mean for our listeners out there who are looking for, just fun and easy shit to read. We're not reading Hegel, I promise.
Yeah, I think that was perhaps one mistake I made in my old podcast, Everybody Loves Communism, was I was perhaps a little too ambitious with the number of 100-year-old multi-part texts that I thought I could cover in a week or a month or whatever, which is not to say, like, you should definitely read those texts. But there's a reason why there aren't that many podcasts that try to do that, because it is really hard. But we did manage to do some, and I'm really proud of all the episodes that we put out on these on texts and on history. But I think what we're going to focus on when we tackle texts is going to be a little more contemporary, shall I say?
Yeah. Last 20 years.
Yeah, because it would take a really long time to get up to that point in history if we started at the beginning.
Yeah. And maybe our next episode, we will talk about a text that you and I just read sort of together, Inhabit, Instructions for Autonomy. It's been circulating for a few years now. It came out in, I believe, 2018. And has been pretty influential in contemporary insurrectionary communist and communization circles for a while. If listeners want to read it before our next episode when we'll talk about it, folks can find it on www.inhabit.global. Inhabit.global. And you find the actually kind of nice little website there. It's this pungent orange color. You click Read Inhabit.
Can't miss it.
No, you cannot indeed. But maybe we'll dive into that next week and talk about maybe the splash that it's made, what it means to us, where it comes up short, or what feels meaningful for each of us in this. Because I'm sure we're going to have differing opinions on it, and I love that for us.
Hell yeah. Oh my god, the book club, it's starting. Did we just start it?
Well, I think we just started it.
The Party Girls Book Club. Yeah, it's not just a clever name. I love that we are talking about the party, because that's something I spend a lot of time thinking about, and it is really cool to me that something so generative has come out of what seemed at first, probably to anyone I told, like a silly... I mean, it is kind of a silly name for the podcast that I fucking based it on a pun I made in my Tinder profile. But my point is, I guess, that I just really wanted to encapsulate both the silliness and the seriousness with which me and Sam approach our political lives, and hope that that spreads to all you guys out there in podcast radio land.
Aw, you tickle my heart. Well, Jamie, it was really nice to go to the summit with you. I hope you got some rest. I was fucking exhausted for like a week. I'm finally just recovering. I came home and slept straight for 12 hours, like several days in a row. I didn't even realize how hot that Arizona sun is. So I hope you're taking care of yourself. And I really look forward to launching our book club.
Oh my god, me too. I hope the same for you. And I'm so excited to keep on doing this project. And thank you for listening, everybody out there in Radio Land. I was just about to sign off, but I always ruin it. I always step on myself when we have a nice sign off that we've teed up for ourselves, because I would like to mention that most people are currently listening in the ELC feed, if my data is to be believed. And I would love people to move over to the brand new shiny Party Girls feed, because I guess I am going to stop putting it in the ELC feed eventually. But I'm afraid to do it, because I'm afraid that just no one's going to listen to it if I do that. So I don't know. Please subscribe to the Party Girls feed if you still want to hear this podcast.
Yeah, and check it out. I've been folks have been listening to it on Spotify as well. So wherever you get your podcast, subscribe to the feed. And thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.